You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. It is 12:40. It is 40 minutes past midnight. I'm exhausted. Harrison is exhausted. We're going to try to talk about the Laker game in an interesting way and not as it just being one of the 82 games that this team is contractually obligated to play and one of the 82 games that Harrison and I are contractually obligated to cover. So we're going to find something interesting to talk about that. And then on the backside of that, what I'm sure will be an earth-shattering conversation, we are going to throw to some audio that I was able to grab in my time at Spectrum Sportsnet. They were kind enough to invite me there. Harrison, you were able to go, right? You had a good time there, right?
No, I did not. I did not go. I was at the Lakers game.
Oh, man. You didn't get the invite, huh?
Really, really glad that you realized that I wasn't there.
I could have sworn you were there.
Let's move on.
All right. As always, make sure you guys are following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Harrison is at Lakers Nation. I am at Lakers Outsiders. The Lakers played a game tonight. They built a lead, then they blew it, and then they came back and took a lead and held on to that lead all the way until the end of the game. They have struggled. I mean, the trend that you and I were kind of worried about was that they would get punched in the face and the Lakers would just kind of wilt, and it was kind of nice to see tonight that they got back to being that more gritty team that could withstand a couple smacks upside the head.
Yeah, I mean, granted, it was against the Kings, and granted, the Lakers did turn the ball over 25 times, so they were pretty far from perfect tonight. But what I thought was the biggest story of the game, or the two biggest stories of the game, was number one, the starters looked really good, which generally has not been the case for the Lakers this year. And the Randall, more importantly, the Randall-Lopez front court continued to look really good, really good, which is good for the Lakers. And, you know, like they didn't go to that front court a lot early on, which was kind of surprising, but they're going to it now and it seems to be working pretty well. And so I think those are big things. And then also just that the Lakers, they went on that 22-6 run to start the game, and it looked like, well, I mean, it's never really safe to assume that this team is going to blow anyone out, but they looked like they were going to kind of maybe cruise to a victory. And then they basically gave all of that up by halftime. They were only up by one going into the half. And then in the third quarter, they ended up giving up, like, I think, like a 12-3 run to come into the second half. And it was like, oh, okay, well, here's, like, the same old Lakers. But then they battled back, and they ended up, like, outscoring the Kings the rest of the way. And they kind of, like, you know, they had an easy victory by the end of it. And so I think that is a sign of resiliency for a team that has not displayed a whole lot of that this season.
I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to, you know, grant them say anything that like, oh, they've turned a corner. Look at that. I'm not going to go there quite yet.
I'm not saying they turned a corner. I'm saying it was a positive sign.
But when I was saying wait, what the hell took so long? Like this was the front court that everybody thought was going to be good, that everybody thought was going to fit well. Like, how are we 40 games into the year and finally we're seeing this?
I mean, I'm not really sure, to be honest. I think Luke just had a different view of this team. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a little worrying, but it is good that we did get here and we did get to watch that front court, and we have seen them. Now, again, it's against Atlanta, which is actually the worst team in the NBA, and then Sacramento, who is one of the worst teams in the NBA. And this team has gone through ups and downs, and it's nice that they are currently on an up. One thing that I did notice tonight was that KCP looked by far his most energetic that he's looked since this whole jail thing popped up. And it was funny because we were sitting there, and I could have sworn you were in on this conversation, but I was talking with Pete of Laker Film Room while we were all watching the game in the Spectrum Sportsnet offices, and like, it was just it's a completely boring and easy thing to point out, but I would imagine KCP sleeping in his own bed and finally having all that behind him kind of reinvigorates him as a player. And tonight, he was an animal defensively on ball. He's great.
He's had his best two games in a long time, and I don't know that it's necessarily a coincidence that they came right after he was KC free.
Yeah, yeah. I used that joke on Twitter, and I added to it that KC free is better than KCP as in penitentiary. But yeah, I would say the other thing too that I really liked about the Lakers tonight was the pace, and that has seemed to be something that they are really focused on, especially the last couple games. Is they realize that, oh yeah, that's right, we are terrible in the half court. We need to get out and run as much as we possibly can. Lonzo being healthy greatly helps the Lakers to be able to do this, but their pace over the last couple games has been significantly better.
Yeah, it was actually funny. Before the game, when we were all talking to Dave Yeager, somebody asked him, you know, you guys like to play fast, but the Lakers play at the fastest pace in the NBA. How do you find the balance between your pace and their pace? And he's just like, well, it's not going to be a problem because I want to play faster and the Lakers play faster. And so we'll just play really fast. And, you know, turns out that doesn't work out super well when you have Zach Randolph and Willie Cauley-Stein as your starting front court. But, you know, I guess, hey, amp up the pace and tank, I guess. I don't really understand, like, looking at that roster, why that is a team that wants to play fast. But, you know, hey, Yeager's going to Yeager.
Would you say Yeager bombed tonight?
Yeah, I would say so.
But I don't know. They have some pieces that you could see why, like De'Aaron Fox would want to play fast. And Willie Cauley-Stein.
Well, sure. They just have so many big guys, and yeah, they're overloaded in terms of like overbalanced in terms of front court that you would not that you would think they look more like a grit and grind team than a mm-hmm. like a fast paced team.
Yeah, I don't. There was some corners of the internet that thought that the Kings were going to jump up and surprise people this year, and that roster to me is just basketball vomit. It's not very good. Any last things from this game before we move along and we get into the scrums, basically, that I got to participate in?
Nope, not really.
All right, cool. We are going to start with Mike Bresnahan. We have an interesting conversation. He comes from a journalistic background, so we got into whether or not the LeVar Ball should count as news, journalistically speaking. And then we also got into a little bit about how Magic should maybe handle this situation. That was a fun conversation. And then immediately after that, Caron Butler sits down with us, and we get into how the locker room handles trade rumors and how he, if he had any advice to give to these guys on how to be professional throughout all this, what that would be. And that was really good. Caron Butler, one of the nicest people I think I've ever spoken to in this kind of setting. He was really good, both on the audio that we're providing here and off of it. And then last but not least, we talked to James Worthy, who is always fun and always entertaining. We got into all kinds of stuff again in social media. We got into how the Showtime Lakers would fare against this current climate of NBA basketball, whether he likes the way the game is being played now. All of that good stuff. It was a really fun night there at Spectrum. I'm flabbergasted because I thought you were there with me throughout the whole time, Harrison. But next time, huh?
Wouldn't be the first time you've locked me out of interviews, Anthony.
The big thing going on right now is the LeVar Ball stuff and the quotes. And for me personally, because I was interested in becoming a journalist, and then I did some stuff in PR, and then now I'm back to more of the journalism stuff. But
How would you define LeVar quotes as news as a journalist, or does it depend on the context by which those quotes come out?
That's a really good question. You know, I feel like the LA Times is actually doing it the right way. They're not necessarily seeking out the controversy, but if they see it elsewhere, then maybe they'll start talking about it. And that's kind of what we do here. You know, if it becomes news, if it affects the team, mm-hmm. and if, you know, like the other day, Luke and Lonzo started talking about it because everyone's like, hey, you know, this is what LeVar said. That's when we'll jump in. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think we're seeking out that controversy because it's an interesting line. I haven't seen anything like it in my 14 years following the team around. I've seen much worse, believe me. My first full year on the beat was when Rudy Tomjanovich quit halfway through the season. It's like, what? You know, he'd been there for like 4 months and he was gone.
Yeah,
and I had the season before that, I did the Laker playoff coverage because I did the LA Kings that year. They were terrible, so they rolled me into the Laker playoff coverage, and that was the last year of Shaq and Kobe. So I've seen a lot, mm-hmm. and the fact that those teams, and even Kobe himself, he would zing teammates, he would zing opponents. Phil Jackson would go after David Stern sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, and they still won championships. Mm-hmm. So to me, those days were just the craziest of the crazy. And this is, I haven't seen anything like this, but I don't think it's like as wild and as dire as, you know, some of the things I have seen over the last 14 years.
From the state of journalism, though? Because for me personally, I think we're finally starting to see the result of when clicks decide what is and is not news. This is the direct, this is what comes out of that. And from a journalist, from a former journalist, well, you're still a journalist, but from that perspective, would you say that, hey, we should start learning our lesson here and maybe not let clicks and readership and ratings decide what gets covered?
Yeah, I've always thought that the person who is talking has to be like a member of the team or a member of another team, you know, someone who is in the NBA circle.
Mm-hmm.
And I try not to deviate too much from that. So if Shaq's mad at Kobe, that would have been a story. If Kobe's mad at Powell, absolutely. If Phil is mad at the whole team, if Mark Cuban is ripping on Phil, and vice versa,
mm-hmm.
these are all stories because they're within the NBA sphere.
Directly tied to it.
I'm not sure I've wrapped my arms completely around the LeVar Ball situation because he's not a coach
mm-hmm.
or a player or an opponent. You know, so I'm not quite sure how much of a voice to give him. It's a great question.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, it's amazing how much he's on CNN 1 second and ESPN 1 second. And he's everywhere. So
mm-hmm.
he's done a good job of marketing himself. I just don't know where the line should be drawn.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys have a tough job.
It's the conversation about it. To me, it's too bad that it's dominated by, oh, he's just some dad. It, to me, it's more interesting to debate whether or not this is actually news
mm-hmm.
and take the conversation from there. Because that, I think, has a larger impact on it than whether or not he thinks Lonzo isn't playing enough, personally.
Yeah, you know, it's so weird. We definitely jumped in on it the last 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the earlier stuff, we didn't do much of anything. We talked about the meeting
mm-hmm.
that you had with the front office and that type of thing. And, of course, Magic was on air early in the draft process. Actually, I think it was right after the draft, probably Lonzo's introductory press conference, and Magic said something to the effect of, you know, I'm not even sure we were going to take him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went out there and got to know him and the family and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's
suits on these guys.
it's been in the periphery for a while. Just in the last few days, we've really dug into it the last couple of days. Well, not even dug into it,
yeah.
We've covered it the last
yeah.
couple of days.
Do you think Magic at some point should say something? Or do you think that lends legitimacy to it?
That you know, I don't have an opinion on that.
Yeah.
That's a tough question.
LeVar? Is that what you're talking about?
Magic will say something to him.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of understood it early on
uh-huh.
that it made sense that just leave it alone and maybe it'll kind of take care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But now that he has Jeff Goodman, one of ESPN's top journalists, following around Lithuania,
yeah.
it's already legitimized at this point. So I personally, I, I, I it, if I was Luke, I'd kind of hope, all right, hey, can we just Magic, please?
Well, I was at Shootaround today, and uh-huh. Luke was like, hey, I want to talk about different things. You know, I want to talk about what I'm paid to do, mm-hmm. and that is to coach the team. And that kind of resonated with me. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, Luke needs to worry about a team. They have a game in 12 hours. Mm-hmm. And I could see how it had been like a pretty wild 48-hour news cycle. But I could also see where Luke is like, wait a second, you know, enough's enough. Because there were more of the same questions today. What do you think about this? You know, someone, I think he was asked about Stan Van Gundy, mm-hmm. saying he wasn't going to talk to ESPN when they came out to cover the Pistons game in a couple weeks. I think it's fascinating that the Coaches Association had that statement a couple mm-hmm. days ago. So I really don't have an opinion. I just kind of watch everything. And I'm like, huh.
Yes.
I've seen something kind of like this, but not really, ever.
Yes.
It's unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's unique. Yeah, Ryan, I feel really underdressed myself.
I know, seriously. You guys going to whack somebody after
this? Yeah. So you mentioned, like, listen to you off the record, but, like, Julius Randle texting you saying, oh, why did you say, like, you're not playing defense? Mm-hmm. How do you balance that between, you know, writing with the LA Times and now where Spectrum is kind of like pro-Lakers? How do you find that balance?
Yeah, you know, when we talked about me taking this job, I was like, I have to be myself. You know, I can't be, you know, I'm not going to lie on the air. And to this day, I haven't, you know, or I really don't think I have. And I feel comfortable coming here every day. Like, yeah, I'm going to be me. You know, the producers definitely determine a lot of what's going to go on the show. So if they've lost 9 in a row, we're not going to talk about that for all 90 minutes of the pregame show. There'll be other things to talk about. We'll have a little fun. Maybe, you know, do our own version of Shaq and the Fool, you know, whatever that might be. But they've been great, and I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, I feel like, you know, definitely traveling a lot less and enjoying that part. And I feel like I can still be myself, too, and opine when I want to about what I want to. It's cool that way.
Nice.
Yeah.
How have you adjusted to social media?
It's been about the same, actually. Yeah, I think my followers are still growing at about the same rate. Maybe a little less breaking news because I'm not with the team, you know, all the time. So I think that's definitely a difference. Still do Twitter. Sent out a couple tweets from the shoot round today. Definitely not as intense as it was when I was the beat writer for the Times. That's for sure. Just because I'm not around them. Like if I was out there tonight, I'd be at Luke, you know, just talking pretty soon to the media, and I'd be there hammering away whatever he's saying and asking questions and stuff. So there's a little bit less of that, but I definitely still do Twitter. I'm terrible at Instagram, embarrassingly bad. I started an account a year and a half ago. I think I posted 6 photos. Not many of them have stuff to do with the Lakers. So I'm pretty woeful at Insta. When I was at the Times, we started to do Periscope and Snapchat, and I'm like, hey, this just isn't for me.
Does anybody do that anymore, Periscope?
Yeah, I've been thinking about doing it for like half times and stuff, but I don't really see very many people
around on it. It's pretty rare, I think. It was big for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I went away. And I'm like, okay, good. Wasn't really doing it that way. Snap just wasn't for me. I don't post a lot of pictures of myself. I don't take a lot of pictures of myself. So I don't show it to a lot of people. You know, I just don't, I don't know. I'll tweet, but I just don't post photos. But it's up there. You have to be really socially active. But I'm 46, so I'm...
No.
Yeah. So I'm up there. You know, a lot of people, like Kelly Tennant, who works with us, she's 30. Or thereabouts. And
off the record.
Yeah.
Strike.
But she's much more active on Insta than I am. She's always like, Brez, you have to get on Insta. I'm like, okay. You know, but she has to, because she's a millennial. And... I might be 2 generations removed from her age-wise.
Do you ever get that itch to start digging like a journalist used to, or is that pretty much taken care of at this point?
Well, I don't have a long, in-depth platform anymore.
Yeah.
You know, now it's the most I think I'll ever talk is Brez's 3-point play, which is a pregame 3 things to look for, mm-hmm. and a postgame 3 things that we just saw. Mm-hmm. It might go like 2 minutes, maybe 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty centric to the game. So yeah, I just there's not that platform anymore to really go in depth on as much as I used to. That's for sure. I mean, back then I could take 2 or 3 weeks to write a story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I was doing Lonzo this year, I probably would have gone. When the team was in Washington, talk to John Wall. Mm-hmm. When they're in Boston, talk to Kyrie Irving. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's going to take a while to collect all these quotes and then just amass them and do, you know, take like a total of 2.5 or 3 weeks to do it. And write like 1,500 words.
Hey, man. You're done.
Yeah.
You're done.
All right, guys. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Okay, how y'all doing?
Right.
Maximo.
Nice to meet
you. Is this me and this one? Or
just you, Eric.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to sit here and listen closely to you.
This is special.
So you were a part of the last Lakers rebuild in 2004 and 2005. So I wanted to ask you, how difficult was that, and even without social media?
It was extremely tough at the time, but we knew the direction we was headed. And obviously we had arguably the best player to ever play the game of basketball in Kobe Bryant. So, it was fun times still because we was young. You know, expectations were on us because, you know, Shaq just left and all that. But at the same time, it was fun because the crowd, you know, the fans, they accepted us with open arms. They was happy to see us. They was with us. Didn't get booed or anything like that. They just watched us mature on the fly.
A big factor this year has been the trade rumors and who might be going on their way out. You eventually were traded. How did you handle that personally? And is there any advice you would give guys like Julius Randle or Clarkson who are dealing with that maybe for the first time as seriously as they are?
You know what? You only can control what you can control,
mm-hmm.
and that's being a professional. You know, showing up to your job on time. You know, being an asset to the team
mm-hmm.
and to the organization. And just, you know, let the chips fall where they may. And that's how I looked at it. You know, every opportunity was an opportunity for me not only to improve myself and my game, but enhance, you know, what now is your analytical stock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where, you know, other teams, every time you step out there, it's a job interview.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other teams are watching, you know, and it's an opportunity for you to get better. And, you know, hopefully the guys understand that. And they do. Like some of the names that you see in the trade, you know, mill and things like that,
mm-hmm.
like in the rumor mill, guys are out there really performing at a high level and they pocket the minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does that have an effect on the locker room? That because once that is a cognizant thing that's in people's heads and people start to looking at it from a perspective of, all right, I kind of got to get mine here a little bit, especially for somebody like Randle who is about to be a free agent. Does that start to have an effect on the locker room?
You know, in all actuality, no one is untradeable.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a no-trade clause.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, I mean, everybody that comes into, you know, the locker room is really tradable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you got to always just control what you can control. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
if you're not in the rumor mill, you could easily be in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
you might not even know about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you might not even know. It's
yeah.
just somebody else's name is, you know, getting more traction than yours right now. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? So, like, just control what you can control. That's the business of basketball. And I think the young guys understand it now because, you know, during our era, you know, we didn't understand, you know, we didn't have social media and things like that. So it wasn't out there like that. But now it's a little different. So you got to avoid the noise. You know, you gotta, you know, not look at your phone every time you see a tag with your name mentioned or something like that. Like, you just gotta continue to play.
Mm-hmm. How would you have handled the social media? Because, I mean, it's insane amounts right now. It was kind of starting to catch up there right at the end of your career. But how would you handle how crazy that the news environment can be nowadays?
Yeah, Pat Riley gave me some of the best advice ever. You know, when I was a rookie, he said, stop reading the paper. You know, like, if you're playing bad, don't read the paper.
Mm-hmm.
If you're playing really good, you probably shouldn't read the paper. Because, you know, you're gonna start smelling yourself a little bit and, you know, bigging yourself up a lot. But if you're playing bad, you're going to start believing that, you know, the people that's writing saying you're bad, you start believing that, then that's sinking into your judgment as a basketball player. Because, like, we're not robots. You know, guys
mm-hmm.
really care about their performance and what they do out there. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in this business.
Mm-hmm.
It's the reason why they're good because they separated themselves from the pack a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I understood that, and you know how I would deal with it is to separate myself from the noise. I would just do my job and try to do other things to, you know, ease my mind, take my mind away from the stuff. Like go to the movies, go roller skating, things like that. And I see the guys doing it. I follow some of them on Instagram and social media. Yeah. So they got hobbies.
Mm-hmm. So with the Lakers right now kind of slipping out of that little playoff contention, what should they focus on the next second half of the season in order to, you know, what could they do at this point to attract those superstar free agents that they're hoping to?
Just continue to play hard. Just continue to play hard and leave it all out there and continue to grow on the fly. Because what you do is you got a season that's just there for the taking still. You know, a lot of games that went down to the wire, you know, beat some quality teams on the stretch, lost to some teams that you probably, you know, obviously would have wanted those wins. But it's a learning experience, and you have to go through those growing pains to learn how to win. And that's exactly what they're experiencing. You know, like you take any team in the association and you take three or four guys out the starting lineup, not just any guys, not the end of the bench. I'm talking about rotation guys, key guys, Lonzo Ball, Brooke Lopez, KCP, you know, Brandon Ingram for stints of time. You take those guys out of lineups and you tell me where that team is going to fall or what it's going to look like. And now this is a young team who haven't established a philosophy or a flow of how to win yet. So now they're just, you know, going through the growing pains. But I feel like once it starts clicking and once they get a format and guys really understand their roles and what's expected of them on a consistent basis to win games, it's going to happen. And like Kobe even touched on, he said, you know, you can't jump the gun to move the young nucleus. They got to grow together. They got to hurt together. They got to go through it. You saw that with Golden State. You know, you saw that with Golden State where, you know, the Splash Brothers and those guys, you look at them, you're like, oh, yeah, they're fun to watch and they're talented, but they're getting their ass kicked. And then they turn it around, and now they're the best thing since sliced bread. You know what I mean? So, like, it's a process, but it's fun. Like, last year, I'm honest, I'm with the network now. It wasn't fun to watch. This year, it's exciting to watch because you can't go into a game saying, I know they're going to lose that game. You just never know. And that's a good thing with a young nucleus, led by, you know, first and second year guys.
How close did you ever get to coming back to the Lakers?
So the year of 2000 and the year I went to the Detroit Pistons. So that was after 2004. It was 2014 after we went to the Western Conference Finals with Oklahoma City Thunder. I ended up going to the Detroit Pistons, but I was coming back here.
I
sat down, talked to Mitch. I was going to do a one-year deal. It was a balloon payment. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to stay in Detroit. I said, I'll do that next. I'll do that. You know, I thought I had more time. You know, you play forever.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, you know, after 2 years here, then I go back. It just never worked.
And was Kobe the draw?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I was trying to gauge when he was going to retire. I was always trying to gauge that. I was just like, okay.
I think we all were trying to gauge
that. Yeah, but the injuries happened, and then, you know, obviously, you know, he wasn't going to stick around and, you know, be an average player, below average, you know. So,
do you have a favorite Kobe story that you haven't really told anybody?
Yeah. I got first. Yeah.
You know, one of the ones that stick out, you know, more than any was, you know, I've told this story, but, you know, I tell it. You know, we was headed to Milwaukee, and, you know, Kobe's just sitting back in the back of the bus, me and Lamar, with him, Chris, me and all of us talking. And I'm like, hey, man, y'all gonna come by the house? You know, back in Milwaukee, it's cold as hell outside. It's negative 20 or something. And I'm like, man, I got a party bus. I want everybody to come back to my neighborhood, inner city of Racine, Wisconsin. And everybody said they coming. I said, he said, you ask Kobe, Lamar. Yeah, I'm gonna ask him. He's like, man, he ain't coming. I said, no, Kobe come. I'm gonna ask him. I said, Kobe, man, you gonna come? You know, yeah. I come. It's all good. So he gets on the bus, comes down, like we switch clothes and everything, put on our warm ups, drive down to Racine, Wisconsin. It's about 60 people out there. You know what I mean? Just right in the neighborhood, from grandmother's house. She made ribs, she made dressing, she made everything. kind of like a Thanksgiving feast. And all the guys come in, and Kobe Bryant sits down, start eating everything. Eat ribs, eat dressings, and everybody's like, Kobe Bryant eat ribs, man. Going crazy. And that was just like my Kobe Bryant story because, like, who would have knew? Like, he always getting on me for drinking Mountain Dew and stuff like that. And he comes in the house, eat all the dressing, the ribs, extra sauce, right there in the neighborhood, took pictures with, didn't turn nobody away. It was like, it was 60 to start with, probably ended up with a couple hundred out there, man, took pictures with everybody out there. It was like one of those moments. It was special.
How crazy driven was he? Because that was, like you said earlier, that was like right after the Shaq stuff, and he wanted to let everybody know that, all right, the Lakers are still going to be okay. Do you have it? Was he just insane in practices? Or?
Yeah, he was insane because every time we used to come, I actually would stand at the hotel right next to the practice facility. I was there for like 4 months, you know, trying to find a place in LA. And every time I would come over there, Kobe was in the gym. Mm-hmm. I don't care when the hell I came, he was there. Whether it was morning, I'm trying to beat everybody there to show that I, you know, I'm invested in this more than anybody. Kobe was there already, or he was just finishing.
Mm-hmm.
And then at night, he was there already. And then, you know, instead of like what a lot of people do is they're afraid of the moment or afraid to ask questions, I just start tagging along. You know, I just start asking questions. And, you know, at first I feel like he probably thought, like, he's crazy. But then after a while, he just took a liking to me. And that's why we tight to this day, you know, like the energy was just, it was just good. It was authentic. I was trying to learn. I was trying to, you know, pick his brain and learn from one of the greatest players ever to play the game of basketball. And that's exactly what happened.
Do you ever go back and play the what if game? Like the, cause the Lakers send you to Washington and it indirectly leads to them getting Powell cause they sent Kwame down to Memphis. But there's a what if here where it could be you, Kobe, Lamar, Marc Gasol, and then that would be the core moving forward. Do you ever play that what-if game?
Yeah, absolutely. That was, you know, the numbers, you know, was always an issue. That's the only thing. You know, like before, you know, your agent, your lawyers, whoever you have, your representation, they work things out to get you in the best situation as possible. And, you know, the numbers wasn't right on our end,
mm-hmm.
you know, but everything else was perfect. I always looked at LA to be, you know, home, and this was the perfect situation. It's like, it's where I learned everything. Pat Riley told me the game, but Kobe showed me
mm-hmm.
everything. Like, he was my age. He showed me, you know, the preparation on how to be consistent, how to be a professional, how to manage yourself, how to carry yourself, how to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he showed me all of that. And that right there is priceless. And I took everything that I learned from the Lakers organization and Kobe Bryant, and I went east to Washington, and I was able to become multiple all-star, do those things, and then plant the seeds in other young guys
mm-hmm.
going forward.
Questions about being part of the Sportsnet team? Anything about, you know?
How much do you regret being part of
the Sportsnet team? Not that question.
It's amazing. You know, it really is, and I'm not just saying it because she's here, but, you know, Big Game, Geeter, all the, you know, everybody has just accepted me with open arms from the second I got here. You know, they put me in a situation where I can excel. I told them I was serious about my craft, went to Syracuse Broadcasting School for, you know, 2 summers back-to-back through the NBA Players Association, and, you know, did a lot of internship where I was working sidelines, doing play-by-play calling. They gave me a platform, you know, like they say, once a Laker, always a Laker. And they gave me a platform to, you know, give my knowledge of the game. And, you know, I feel like over the last 3-4 years of my playing days, I wasn't actively out there no more, but I was always in the locker room. Like, damn, you know, like when the players come in, I'm like, shit, you know, you got to go over there to cut. And I was just always in that mode. So now I get to do it. You know, like in the studio, giving it to my audience, and I love it. It's like it's a blessing.
It's got to be also kind of cool doing it alongside James Worthy, who
Come
is
on,
one of the best players
on,
ever
that,
at your position.
I mean, Hall of Fame, Big Game, man. And he listening. Like the first time I did the 360 breakdown, I did Access 360 breakdown, and I'm talking, and I'm like, yeah, because you know, what I would have done, you know, you got to cut Lonzo, drew the defense, going downhill. And James was like, oh, man, that was good. I was like, I wanted to do it, but I man law. But I was like, yeah, Big Gary said that. I told my wife, so you saw Big Gary. I was talking about it when I got home. But that was a special moment for me, man. Special moment.
That's pretty great. That's pretty great.
How would the Showtime Lakers deal with social media?
I don't think it could have been any different than as far as being recognized. I don't think you would have responded to it as much. It wouldn't have meant as much. Yeah, from the 80s. Well, I don't know, because we didn't have it. We didn't have it. Who knows? It might have been emotional and attacked.
Sorry.
You have to deal with it.
Is it almost a blessing that, I mean, there's, I guess, less secrecy now is the point that Kyle Kuzma was trying to make. Would the extra openness get kind of old?
Well, yeah, I think it's overdone because you want to be human. Mm-hmm. And I think the fans, too, I think. One of the biggest, things over my years has been, just be normal. Mm-hmm. Why do you need bodyguards? Why do you need, a posse? Mm-hmm. So, but sometimes, I was at the grocery store one time and somebody said, what are you doing here? Why did you have a worker or somebody doing that for you? I'm hungry. So it's weird how, people react. But I just don't think I would have paid much attention. I don't now. I don't pay attention to it now.
If the players on the team right now, who's impressed you the most this year? So far.
Well, Kuzma's been a big surprise. Being able to come in as a rookie and do what he's done. Not really had shown that. Flashes. I've been impressed with Lonzo as well. He has a very high IQ for the game. I always think of if he had a bunch of shooters around him, like a bunch of pure shooters, what it would be like. Because he definitely has a gift for moving the ball and moving the defense. I know he struggled a little bit earlier, but I think he's come on and talked about social media to be able to play through all the stuff that he's had to play through. He's pretty impressed with
it. Have you seen anything like this in terms of talking about Lonzo Ball and the stuff that he's had to play through? Have you seen anything like this with the rookies?
No, that's the difference in this generation. Mm-hmm. I remember watching Oscar Robertson when I was a kid. Lou Alcindo, he's at UCLA. Game didn't really change that much from the 60s to the 70s. Coaches still were tough on you. It was fundamentally sound. You could get three or four options off of one play, weak side stuff. But it just has evolved into a quicker game, a smaller game, a three-point game. Kareem had 4 years of college. Jamal Williams had 4 years. I had three. Michael Jordan had. So when you get the drill work, I look at Larry Nance, 4 years, a lot of good drill work, theory, science of the game. So I think that's the difference. So I think because of that, I remember the NBA moved the three-point line in a little bit 1 year and moved it back. And it took away the hand check. As long as you didn't extend.
That ruined the game.
That was good defense.
Ruined the game.
You know what I mean? Dennis Johnson, who played for Compton, Pepperdine, and the Celtics. Michael Cooper. If you keep your keep it in, so they took away a lot of stuff that spoiled the defense, and I think that's why can't bump anymore. So,
you like the game as much as it?
There's some times I do, and a lot of times it's not familiar with me. Where I was born to play, it's very predictable.
Yeah.
a lot of three-point shots, a lot of defense. So I can't really equate today's game to the way I was brought up. It's just, you know, and they probably can't equate to the way I played either.
Yeah.
So this is their time, and this is the way it is. I'm thinking it's a younger crowd, you know, different audience. They want dunk.
I tell these guys all the time, their generation's
I've been thinking about the playing style aspect of this too, and somebody, I forget who it was, who made the point online, but they basically said that now with the advent of the three-point line, the way people use it, and it's dunks or three-pointers, and that's pretty much it. And I feel like there isn't the clash of playing styles night in, night out that there might have been from your era, where different coaches coach the game a different way, whereas everybody now is just kind of, we're all going for the same shots.
Yeah, everybody's like, there's only like one identity. It seems to be like Golden State. If you want to win, if you want to compete, you have to play like they play, size up like they size up, find the same type of criteria. And that seems to be the brainwash. Whereas before, we ran a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, but then, you know, Utah would say, okay, you guys run, we're going to beat the shit out of you. You know, get Markey and Carmelo, we're going to play our style. Dallas had their style. Mm-hmm. Detroit had their style. So it's not as much belief in your own style. It's like copycat. Mm-hmm. And not every, you know, and that's what makes Golden State so dominant and makes elite team so dominant is that nobody has their own life. You know, they're not authentic anymore. So they can figure out how to play small. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's the way it is.
I would make the case that, because I think when you're talking about basketball 30 years ago, there's some carryover that wouldn't necessarily work out as well. But I really feel like your Showtime Lakers, because of the inside-out stuff, because of the pace that you guys played at, would actually really play well in this league. How do you think that you guys would fare?
Well, I mean, a lot of people say, you know, the three ball would destroy you. You know, Kareem, how would you?
Byron could shoot pretty well,
though. Kareem keep up? Yeah. We only allow guys who shot 33 or 34%. Mm-hmm. That was Ralph Rubes. You know, we don't see too many people shooting three. Magic shots on the DM. But we ran. You know, if you wanted to go small, sometimes we would go with Michael Thompson or AC Green. They were really fast. Then, with Cooper, Byron, and myself and Magic, I'd be okay with that today. And then if you really wanted to, you know, try to expose Kareem, we would just spread the floor. You know, we didn't have to run every time. We'd walk it up. Mm-hmm. And then we'd spread the floor and put Kareem in the middle. You know, I don't know if Kevin Durant or Jamal Green could handle that. I hate to try to compare and contrast because we don't ever get to play against each other, but I feel really comfortable that in 1983 Philadelphia 76ers team, not too many current teams today that could deal with that team, some of the Celtic teams, Iceberg, and some of the, it's just different when you get three or four options off of one play. Now you get, ISO, you get pretty much that's it. You get one guy going at five defenders a lot of times. There's a lot of teams that run plays, and, you know, like I love the way, you know, Minnesota plays with Butler and the way they set picks. And there's a lot of teams that run really good stuff, so that's what makes the NBA still exciting. When you see the San Antonio, those type of teams. For the most part, it's who could get me a shot.
When you played, the generation that you played on with the Lakers, it was pretty secure, right? You came in and Magic and Kareem were already there, and everybody kind of had their roles. Now, there was some changeover between Norm Nixon and Byron. But with where the Lakers currently are right now, where there is kind of an edict that at the end of this year, we're going to try to bring in two superstars. How would you have handled the difference in locker room security from this year to next year in the rumors that swirl around this team. And
can't control it. Uh-huh. The only thing you can do is say, you know, look, you're here now, and, you know, you try to convey a message that this is who we are now. You can't worry about, you know, what's going to happen, you know, in the future. And I think over my career, I've heard, you know, Pat Riley and other coaches say, look, we need to concentrate on now. I know some of you guys are worried about what's going to happen with All-Star break coming up. That's always going to be a part of the business. So the way I would handle it is, you know, you're in a business and you're here now because we want you here, and you, you know, we can't make any promises about what's going to happen. So I think the quicker guys understand that, the better. Because even though it's, you know, somewhat of a gladiator type sport, football, basketball, it's entertaining, it's still, you know, major business. You can be gone in 48 hours. Mm-hmm. So guys need to understand that. Might not be any fault of your own. You know, you could be a pretty good player, just that you're a commodity. And so I wouldn't hide that from
you. If the free agents that the rumored to be coming next year, who would you pick if you get two?
I like Paul George. Yeah. You know, I like Paul George. You know, he's from here. He wants to come in. He's young. He's the typical Kawhi Leonard, Klay Thompson type player, two-way player. And just the fact that he's from here, and I've heard he wants to come here. So he's one of the guys. Everyone talks about LeBron. I mean, who wouldn't want LeBron? He's got some few years left. You know, coming up in February, I don't know what the situation is with Boogie.
Mm-hmm. That's what was my next question.
Boogie will be I like Boogie. I've always liked. Despite, you know, Dennis Rodman was kind of had that aloofness. But I think if you find the right home, LA's, you know, the magic here.
You could go one way or the other.
You know, as long as he played, you know.
Yeah.
We need him to play. So I like Boogie. You know, you got to take a chance, you know, on personality.
Do you think George and Boogie?
I would love that. And, you know, hopefully we can hang on to a few of our core players that we have now.
Who would you say is, don't move him? Keep him,
well,
no matter what?
It's hard to say. I think Ball's a special player, mm-hmm. surrounded by the right people. I think Ingram is a guy that has a lot more potential than we've seen. Mm-hmm. He won 4 state championships in high school. So he's used to winning. He adapts pretty well. So I like Randall, but a lot of people would like to have Randall. So Clark's in the same way. I mean, but those are the two I think for sure keepers. Kuzma, I think, is also the third wheel. Those are the three that I think don't want to go.
Do you want to help recruit these free agents?
All of the acts, you know, they got pretty good sources out there. You know, they got scouts out there. They got, you know, they know who's available. But yeah, you know, they actually come in and help recruit. I've done it with Carmelo and DeAndre Jordan when Brian was here. You know, just kind of sales pitch, if you will. I'm 0-2, but
you do. You do.
Yeah, I'm due, man. We're all are. All right, guys.
Thanks, James.
All right.